Everybody.
Hey,
Hello.
nice to see you,
Hey.
Doug. Long time no see.
I started the recording, but we can chat. We don't have to get right to business.
Hello.
Hey, Doug. Hello, Mary. Hello,
You can
Bridget.
hear me, my audio might not be working. There we go. Hello.
Hi.
Sounds good.
We can hear you. Yeah.
How's everybody doing?
Good.
Good.
Pretty good.
Tired, but good.
Yeah, I'm a bit tired. I didn't quite get enough sleep. I had to get up early this morning for a doctor's appointment at the hospital,
Oh
you know,
my.
like 8:45. Oh, anyway.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
They're spreading those out over like over all the 24 hours of the day, I think, to have like fewer people cycling through the hospital.
Yeah, and there
Sense.
was a lineup to get into the hospital. It took about 20 minutes to get into the hospital.
Really?
Yeah, one person at a time going in, so yeah.
Wow.
You're still working with the COVID
Yeah,
regulations for COVID, right?
we're not in lockdown right now, and that's come up. Like the doctor said this morning, he said that yesterday there were only two new cases in Quebec City of COVID, and in the province it's down to less than 200. So it's gone pretty low right now. But you know, as he
80%
said, we
active.
have to wait a month and see what happens with whatever else is going on, and see what emerges. But the vaccination seems to be doing the job. So.
Yeah, 80% was what the latest
Really?
in our province, first dose only. We're not up to second doses yet, but 80% over the age of 12 have their first dose. So
Cool.
pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting the feeling that folks around here just have decided that it's over. The government has issued some like all clear signals. Boulder County, where I live, they have a rating system for how, severe the risk is, and they said it's all clear. Although I know if you actually look at the numbers, a lot of still many people are getting COVID. It just tends to be those who are not vaccinated or and it isn't overwhelming the hospitals. So like my mom was in the hospital the week before last, and it was really quiet. It was like almost oddly a peaceful scene. Like it seemed like they could use more people in there.
We need more people at the hospital.
Yeah, perverse thing, but
I know what you're saying, though. Yeah.
yeah. So I don't know. I think that might be just the function too of the American mentality. Yeah. Anyway, should maybe we don't really have a format for these meetings. There's a kind of implied one, and we follow certain patterns like around checking in and talking about agenda items, but usually it's pretty improvisatory, and I have tended to avoid overly structuring things, but there's a downside to doing that, as well as an upside, and hopefully we can kind of capture as much of the upside of improvisation and free flow without the downside of, or the tyranny, some call it the tyranny of structurelessness. I don't know if you've ever heard that term, but there's, it rings true, actually. I'm not proposing any particular structure right now, but just to note that we do tend to start with a kind of check-in, and I think it's good to notice that and to think about, well, is that something that we should always do? Like, is a meeting, like, should we make it more ritualistic? Like, for example, in our reading groups, we often start with, in the Savitri reading groups, and probably in Synthesis of Yoga, we start with a meditation. And that is a kind of attunement, a silence before the reading. I meditate, always, all the time. So I don't need a meditation necessarily, but it's not it's an option. And like, as we think about co-opification, like, what does that mean? It means usually some formalized, some like routine processes and structures, and some of those being codified, some of them being cultural. But part of what this whole meeting is about is looking at that aspect of things, more like not what we're doing, but how we're doing it, and trying to bring clarity and thoughtfulness, you know, to that, to those structures, so that we can do them better, and so that others who, for whom everything we're doing is opaque, can connect and can become participants. So there's always, I think, been a gap between like the vision and the structure, and then the practice is what happens in between that gap, and or doesn't happen because it isn't, the gap isn't bridged. So to me, like the co-op, the formalization of the co-op is a way of bridging the gap, is a way of going from a vision, an artistic vision. To me, this is an artistic project. It's not separate from the art. It's an expression of the art. It's an expression of the poetry. But how is it operationalized? Like how do people do it beyond just a few, you know, a handful of people? How could a larger group of people do it and not descend into chaos? Anyway, by way of, that was a bit of an introduction to the theme, but perhaps we can just start with more of a, like, each person check in and we all sort of listen, say how they're doing, like attune to each other. And then I don't have a particular agenda. We all, I think, had seen the materials provided by Fatima and Sarah, the PowerPoint and the videos. And it was a lot of information. It was a lot. I was a little bit intimidated and overwhelmed at times, but the more I think about it in terms of like, how do we do this as artists? Not how do we have to become business people or something to do this? Like, how do we do it in a way that is, you know, is aligned with what Cosmos is about? I think that there is a way. And so I'm going to trust that that will emerge, and that, you know, in the course of discussions, we'll be able to get our ideas out and, let them be heard and let them organize into something more coherent. So with that said, I'll just zip and listen.
I don't mind doing a quick hello, and I do need an audio check-in to make sure you all can hear me, which seems to be okay at this point. I have a new laptop. My old laptop had a fan that constantly spun in the background and provided all sorts of background noise. So I've been using my phone, and that wasn't charged up at this point. So I tried to use this new laptop, and it didn't have Zoom downloaded. So I'm making sure everything's going and is up to snuff. But yeah, I think the informal formalization of the cosmos is the direction we tend to proceed. And there, like you're saying, there is a gap, and this gap needs to be filled, or is being filled as we speak. And we've all looked at some of the legal speak there, but so I think it will be an ongoing process, as has been noted already. But overall, today's been a busy day, busier than usual. I'm glad I could attend. Rain, my wife, is working at a preschool, or a school preschool, and both my sons now go there starting about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So that's freed me up some daytime activity, as well as with my 9-to-5 job that I'm supposed to work. But it's been nice to have her in the house in the evenings before she was off doing second shift work, third shift work, so we could make ends meet. So time freedom is very helpful. But it's good to see everybody's faces. I think this might be the first time that Bridget and I have officially met face to face here. So great to see you.
I thank you. And I saw you downloaded more Oregon Timelines. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. that kind of segues in. I was actually doing some minor edits of that this week because I found some typos and I seem to be really fond of Pythons. So I went through and I cleaned some of that stuff up and I'm putting out a kind of an updated version. If you would like that updated version, just send me your email and I'll send it to you since you probably want it. So, but it's, so I've spent a lot of time on that and the whole day job thing. It's funny because a lot of the work we're doing now with the co-op with metapsychosis and, you know, it's all this legal stuff, bylaws, procedures, policies, like starting to look at this kind of a setup is exactly what I've been doing on my job, which I work at Fairleigh Dickinson University in their library. I'm one of the directors there for tech services, and it's boring. It's really boring stuff, but it's, I have to, but it pays the bills. So but I've been doing a lot more stuff. I have a new website coming out for my Reiki practice. Actually, I was told it would be out by the end of the week. So that's much more professional than Gothonia.net, which is designed by me. And just trying to increase a lot of stuff with social media, recording a ton of podcasts and, just trying to, and painting. I've done 20 paintings in the last week. So it's just, I'm not suggesting they're good, but I've done 20 paintings in the last week. So busy, like a mixture of stuff. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Must be something in the weather.
Yeah, I'm stuck inside with the air conditioning here. God. So anyway, but nice to see you, Doug. And that's my update too. So I'll let anybody else go who wants to go.
I'll do an update because I have some news related to some things to catch you all up on related to metapsychosis. So I had my interview with Deniz Ozan-George on Sunday afternoon. It was really enjoyable. And we recorded it. And we had a talk about like what format she'd like that to take on the website. And what we settled on is that it will be a kind of podcast, like it will be audio only. She preferred that because she actually wanted to work while she was talking to me. Which actually would be a really interesting visual, but she seemed self-conscious about it, that she would be painting as we spoke. So we're going to do audio only, but then with a kind of abridged transcript of the interview as text and some visuals of her paintings embedded in that. So, and it, she's got a show, like she's got her own show happening in September. And so I think I'll start working on that. I still need to download the audio file and edit it. Looked like maybe I froze for a moment. I'll be working on that. And I think August would be a good time for it to go onto the website in advance of her show. So there was that. And speaking of interviews, go ahead.
No,
my internet's going in and out a bit.
Just affirming that I'm glad that happened, because I know Deniz. I've seen her work, in person.
Yeah.
And I know she's cool. So I'm glad to hear that.
That was pretty incredible. She sent me some some of her new stuff that's not even up on their website just before the interview. It was pretty exciting.
Nice.
So. So this leads me to, do you remember I did an interview of Susan Evans ages ago because we published her poem? And I was thinking, since we got Marjorie's interview up last month, maybe Susan, we got Marjorie's up in May, so maybe Susan's could go up on the website in June. So I made a post of it that's ready to go, and I thought we could talk about what time, what day would be good.
Okay.
For that.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to space it out with other things or.
I have actually just one content related update. So I'm working on Heather Fester's piece, something that she submitted, didn't actually submit, shared, more like shared 2019, I think it was. And we had an evening with a few other people where she recorded it. and we got a good quality recording of the piece, audio only. So I have that file, and I put up, and then I was walking, I was on my bike actually, and I took a picture, which of a place that had a correspondence to her piece. And then I used that picture as the art for the piece, and I got a page up, got in touch with her. She got back to me with some corrections. And I want to just make sure, run that by the editorial group for peer review before scheduling it. But that's something that could be ready relatively soon. Maybe we could maybe do your piece, the interview, and a week or two later, Heather's piece. And I think that's all that's in the pipeline right now. But we also talked about, there's one, right, Bridget?
I have a copy of it. I don't know if you got it. It was, I sent you the metapsychosis email, so I don't know. I hadn't heard back from you, so I didn't know if you saw it. But I sent you, because you said you were volunteered to be like the second reader on that piece, so I don't know if you got it.
I thought I replied to it. It was.
Yeah, I didn't get a response. So.
Oh, sorry. I'll check that again. Remind me the woman's name.
Dela Greenwood.
Right. I do remember reading it, and I remember composing the email to you.
Okay.
So it's probably just stuck in my draft folder. Yeah, let's talk about it. It didn't completely land for me. But maybe this. I don't know if we want to use this meeting to talk it over.
That's fine. We can talk about it outside if you want. That's totally cool. But yeah.
I'll dig up my comments on it. I found that her style worked in the longer one, and in the shorter one, it felt a little opaque. But I'll send you the comments I had.
Okay, great. Thank you.
But Mary, your piece is ready to go. So that could be, we can give that a date. Actually, we can get the calendar.
I had been thinking like Monday.
Sure.
Okay, cool. And speaking of that, I did a third interview with Karen Bercier, who's not Karen Bercier, Karen Murray Bergquist. I know so many Karens, who published under the name of Isabel Granby. Anyway, that one could be like July too. So there was a third interview in that series. We can sort of keep them going.
Okay.
For Plenum, I'm still working on the revisions. I hope to be finished by the weekend, maybe. Anyway, cross my fingers. I still got a little bit to do, but and it always seems to take longer than I think. So,
yeah. Always the way.
Okay, that sounds good. Anything else, Jeffrey Jen?
No.
I was wondering if Heather's, is it the notes on space that you're talking about?
That's it, right.
Okay.
18 notes, actually. Started out as, I think, 13, then went to 15, 18. I think it's settled at 18. So do you want to be a second reader on that, Doug?
If I remember correctly, we went over it at one point, or parts of it, maybe when it was still three or four notes, I can't remember. But I enjoy what we read during that time. So I'd like to be a part of that.
Okay. Space has a way of expanding. So how should we begin talking about the...
So I just wanted to say that I did jumpstart the discussion, because when I looked at the information on the website and the videos, I realized that the sort of big piece on the front end is the values, mission, and
core values
and vision.
Yeah, vision, mission, core values.
And that seemed like a big piece to tackle that we need. You know, we've done discussion about it in the past. So I went through and dug up the stuff, the sort of discussions that we've had, and posted that information on the site, and we've got some feedback from different people on that. So I think it's not quite fully formed, but I think it's moving towards a sense of what we need to do with that, maybe. Anyway, then there are lots of other questions. I have a whole slew of questions about the rest of it. But in a way, they're more technical questions once you work out the vision, mission, and values. You know, it's how you implement them in the actual structures, right? So I don't know how you want to do that, but well, if we can talk about the vision and mission as well.
Well, that's certainly the place you want to start, regardless of what else we're doing, is you need to get those things clear. And then once those are, you know, those are the main things. And then those are going to inform all of the other documents that you come up with, your bylaws. And then once you understand what your values are, then you can say, oh, okay, this is the kind of membership that we want. This is the kind of, this is the business framework we're working in. This is what we're doing about finance. You know, all of that is informed by those three things. So that's probably, so that's definitely the place to start.
Marco, if you had some thoughts about, because you were involved in that discussion as well online.
Well, I added a post to it just before this meeting started. And I've been going back to like the core ideas. What is a cooperative? It's not actually ambiguous at all. It's very, whereas Cosmos, you might get a lot of different answers about that. And some of them, and you'll get many poetic flights, and you'll get very creative answers about that. But if you ask what a co-op is, you can give some fairly precise responses. And there's actually a global, international body that identifies itself as the steward of the cooperative identity and the principles of what makes a co-op a co-op. So like to have the .coop domain name, for example, which we have because I got the paperwork to do that, but really like a co-op should satisfy the seven principles of cooperatives as articulated by the Global Cooperative Alliance, which derived those or adapted those from like the original principles of a group called the Rochdale pioneers in the 1840s, who established what a cooperative business is and what are its general values. Of course, there are cooperatives all over the world in every industry in very, very diverse contexts amongst like geographics, ethnicities, everything. So there's a lot of variation in how principles are concretized in practice. But it seems to me like part of like what even as a prerequisite to our own vision, mission, and statement and values, like do we need to, I think, in some way absorb what these principles are and understand that we're aligning with them or we're not. We could decide that, well, we don't like principle 5 or something like that. And we're just going to, but then we wouldn't be a co-op specifically. We'd be something else. I think all seven principles are worthy. And I think that they are, I think they could be very powerful because if we can align with a global movement, which like in principle, has established like certain governance structures or certain governance sort of methods, not even methods, I take that back, but just the structures, then it takes a lot off. We don't have to do all that work. Like we could more or less say, we agree with ABCD. We agree with 1 through 7. And now let's just really focus on how Cosmos does that. And I think that doing that would, the benefit of it would be that will gain access to all of those resources. Everything from funding, consulting, technology, so, you know, just influence, networks. Like, there are a lot of people out there, and it's not limited to any one geography. You'll find cooperatives in every country in Africa, in Europe, Asia, everywhere. Like, we can be another co-op that operates in that economy, in that world, instead of kind of in this very marginalized space. So I have printed out, I went to the website and I printed out the guidance notes on the cooperative principles, and I've just started reading them. I haven't read through this. It's like a 100-page document that is kind of like the exegesis of the principles. But I mean, principle one is voluntary and open membership. What does that mean? Like, there's things there that are already encoded about about inclusion, about non-prejudice, et cetera, et cetera. Like, we don't have to do all that. There's principles about education. Like, co-ops actively educate their own members and educate, at least indirectly, the world at large about the benefits of cooperation and of, like, how co-ops work and what co-ops is about. There's a principle about democratic control. So I'm not listing these in order, but one of the principles is democratic control. So the members have control of the organization, and you can't sell out, basically. Like, you can't sell to an investor who will come in and, because they've put in the money, they take, you know, a controlling stake in the organization. Like, that's structurally, like, out of bounds. Cooperation amongst cooperatives is another one, meaning that we would privilege doing business or being in partnerships with other co-ops. And there could be a kind of meta level of cooperation. Economic participation. So members have an economic stake in the co-op. If the co-op realizes surplus profits, those are shared proportionally to members' economic participation. So that's what Fatima was referring to as patronage in the videos. Like, if Jeffrey's novels earn, you know, $100,000 for the co-op, and Mary's earn $150,000. But that, in the end of the day, because there's going to be the profit you get as the author, the royalties or whatnot. But because there's other streams of income that are generally sort of created by the collective, you know, the cumulative contributions of all the members, then because we've accounted for what your contribution is, then you also have a right to that proportion, you know, of the profit. So anyhow, I mean, that there are a couple of other principles. Another one I think that is important is the being of benefit. Like, it is meant to be a social good. Like, it's not just for personal enrichment, but it is also an economic activity. So it is meant to generate wealth. Like, we're not allowed to make money. Like, in a nonprofit, there'd be different rules about that. In a co-op, part of the idea is to make money, but it's to do so in a way that is equitable, and for those rules to be encoded in our policies and procedures. Like, if we have all that as a background, then I think part of what it allows us to do is to say that, you know, say that this is a arts and cultural organization, it's an educational organization, and, you know, we're going to focus on these values and these kinds of activities, but we're also part of this larger thing that is a response, actually, to the excesses of industrial capitalism, like, as it arose in the 19th century and the 20th century accelerated, and now we're into, like, technocratic surveillance capitalism, and it's just actually getting more extreme. We can say that it's not just a bunch of artists who have some crazy ideas. it's actually part of something larger, and we're still artists, crazy ideas. So like that I think is, as we look at doing these pieces, and I don't mind just going through one by one and really responding in detail to all of Fatima's and Sarah's guidance. I think that would be great. But why don't, I would suggest that let's start with the cooperation piece and then see how does Cosmos, like what are we really doing in that field, in this field? What's our vision and mission? And those are, and then the values, we could maybe separate out, do sessions to talk about those and then write some drafts, get feedback, you know, make it open to participation. And then, I mean, that might be a, just, that might take itself. I don't even necessarily want to look at the other stuff because that by itself, mission, vision, and values is going to be a substantial chunk of labor, and easily derailed, easily derailed. So, just to keep it on task, I think will be.
I think though, if what we're saying here, from what Jeffrey Jen's saying, and then what you're saying, Marco, it sounds to me like there's a lot of pieces that are already there. And by the way, the PDF document you're referring to, when I went to open it, it said file missing. So I don't know what's happened. I don't know if that's just an error on my end or what.
Because I just opened it and it seems to work on my end, so.
Okay, maybe
it was just a browser thing, actually. There's some kind of like bug. I've seen that, but then I've been able to open it in a different browser.
Okay, I'll try it in a different browser and see if I can get it. But if you've got a number of things, if you've got a set of questions already about what you want to do, there's a lot you could probably plug in, at least initially. Just say, okay, here's the questions and we'll just plug in the cut and paste answers or whatever. But then when you actually go sit down and have a meeting about each one of these things, like, okay, we're going to talk about mission. You kind of have a starting point and say, okay, this is what we're starting with. How are we going to tailor this to be specific to what Cosmos is doing? You know what I mean? I've just found that in any kind of group when I'm working on that kind of stuff, it's always good to have some kind of starting place, some kind of a set example that you're working with to say, okay, you know, how is this or isn't this what we're doing? And if it's not what we're doing, you know, how do we fix this up? You know, but at least something that seems like a respectable starting point, you know? That's usually the simplest way to just start. And then that way, yeah, if you want to have separate meetings to say, yeah, let's just spend this one talking about crafting a mission statement. Let's spend another one, you know, maybe more than one, like you said.
So can you clarify, like, what would be, there'd be a kind of like first draft or before the meeting? Yeah,
well, kind of like a template almost. It's where you, a lot of times, like we were just doing this for the libraries and it's like, okay, so we were going back and looking at other academic libraries and saying, okay, well, what's their mission? Like, what's their vision statement? What are they saying? It's not that we have to copy their mission or vision, but at least you get an idea of how we want to formulate it. And if you're saying that in a lot of these documents and a lot of the stuff we've already come up with, we already have an idea of where we're going. It's not like, it's like, you know, let's not reinvent the wheel. Something could be plugged in as kind of an opening vision statement, you know, saying, you know, Cosmos intends to, you know, is, you know, has this particular objective in mind and this goal and wants to do this. And, you know, and at least it's something that people can start to talk about and say, well, is it really this or is it more this? You know what I mean? Just something as a starting, you know, something to come up, even if it ends up being totally wrong in the end or not what we want. It would just be some place to at least start the conversation, because otherwise it gets very, very abstract. You know what I mean? That's just my practical side coming out.
I also found that there's a kind of a fairly clear statement about what is a mission statement. What is a vision statement? That material is quite, I actually found very useful, because I have done this kind of thing with organizations before. My department, the university, went through the whole process of a mission statement, a vision statement, all that kind of stuff. I've seen this all done before in organization. And it's a messy process, and it tends to get down to semantics at the end. That is to say, you want this word or you want this word, you know, and then you get arguments that go on for hours about whether it's this word or whether it's this word that you're going to put into the mission statement. Yep. You know, which is, I mean, it is part of the process, but, you know, there is a broader thing. So this is why I sort of felt that I needed to look into what we'd already done and try and pull the pieces together. But I think maybe, I don't know, if it's one person who drafts, I agree with Bridget. I don't know whether it's a template exactly or even a draft statement. Somebody it's a starting puts together a draft. You know, to be torn apart and rebuilt, but right. You need something to start with.
Exactly. That's exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you were to go to a business textbook, you'd get a kind of standard version of a mission statement and a vision statement, right? And I know there are many variations, but business coaches and consultants may have their own, you know, reasons for doing it one way or another. But do you have any that you particularly like or would want to rely on and start there?
I kind of feel like we should look at what we've got and re-massage it into our own draft vision statement, our own draft mission statement, just because the references I have are for organizations that are very different than this one. So I don't think you can just copy over their mission statement and get something out of it that we can use. I don't know, it may be just me, but.
Do you want me, okay, I'll stick my neck out here. Do you want me to volunteer to put together a draft vision and mission statement? And literally it's something that isn't going to be designed to be torn completely apart. I'm not expecting that anybody's going to adopt it out of hand as I produce it. But being I've been done this regularly, I did it for my job and I've just done it for Cathonia and I've just done it for, I don't mind throwing something together that can then get fed to the wolves. You know, so if that's helpful, I mean, I don't know that I can draft something in the middle in this meeting right off unless you want me to start.
No, I think it needs to be done outside the meeting time. I agree.
Okay. No, I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm thinking, unless, you know, that was the idea, but yeah, I don't mind drafting something. And actually, since you've already started the thread, Jeffrey Dent, I can actually just add to that. And then just say, okay, here's my draft. And then next time we have a meeting, we can take that and people have time to look at that. Because I hadn't actually seen your post. And I just.
And there might be some initial discussion about the draft version that we can draw on when we actually meet as well. So, yeah.
Right. And then we can get down to the semantics.
The nuts and bolts. Yeah. Yeah.
Is the text that's on Cosmos Co-op website under the About Us tab, is that maybe
that's
a rich
part
resource?
Of the background. It's part of the background, but the thing is there are other threads of conversation around this.
Okay.
There's the key docs, which Carolyn, I mean, with her last name, Marshall.
Savory, yeah, she did a lot of work.
And she did a lot of work on that. And so I'd like to draw into that. And then there's sort of an ongoing discussion between different between members. So anyway, I think there's, I mean, what I got the sense is, and part of that's Marco's input, is this, because part of the thing of a mission statement or a vision statement is it's kind of focused into a single understanding. And Marco's comment is maybe we don't have a single understanding. Maybe it's a multiple understanding that we have, but that could be incorporated into the mission and the vision statement. If, you know, I mean, there's, it's an open process. We can do what we want with it. So
right.
I think we can do that.
They tend to be a little broader where we might actually be able to come together on the differences might be under the value statements. You know what I mean? Because yeah. Then you're starting to demonstrate we're trying to do this and, you know, we're trying to accomplish that. And you know, this or we represent this and, you know, which we want to do, you know, because it's not, missions and vision statements tend to be very, you know, short. They're a sentence or two or maybe a couple.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to try to encapsulate, find the right words to encapsulate those differences, you know, because yeah, because it may well be a paradoxical thing. It's one thing or another. It may be more than one thing. So that's where I think that's where the hard work is going to come in. That's what it's going to be. Trying to figure out.
I mean, part of it is we don't have to, we can in the crafting be non-reductive. Like we can we can build the openness and the multiplicity into the particularity of the expression that, you know, because you can't have like, in, you know, we have to also be practical. I think that if we have sort of the undefined, open, always like never particularized mission statement, it's just going to be too confusing. Like, we need to be able to, in documentation that has legal standing, point to one set of words like that actually like is anybody who's a member of Cosmos can resonate with. Like, so it has to be the right note, and that is a creative challenge, but that's why we're here.
But that is where you want to start, because then, you know, once you have the big umbrella statement, then you can get into particulars, you know, of how that's going to be, you know, that's when you get into the technical nitty gritty of, you know, how are we going to make Cosmos happen, and what are the details of, you know, membership, and you know, like all the things that were just being discussed in those documents, you know, membership privileges, you know, what your business framework is, what you're doing about all that stuff has to, but you have to talk about what the overarching vision is. And I know we've talked about it so many times.
The documentation says a mission statement is a brief, powerful statement of the reason the organization exists. Mm-hmm. It uses bold, clear, and memorable language. So the mission statement is short, but the vision statement is a guiding image of success for the organization, highlighting its hopes and ambitions for the future, part emotional and part rational. The vision statement doesn't have to be as precise as the mission statement. So there's some room there for, you know, giving a little bit more scope to the vision, focusing in on the mission statement. And then the core values also has more room for extension in the way things are traditionally done. So we can do something within these traditional ways of doing things and still leave us open for certain openness in the process without compromising, I think, the core of it.
Right. And I also think, like, Veronica, you were just talking about the principles of co-ops. I mean, a lot of that probably can be applied to the value statements when we get to that point. It sounds to me like a lot of that, there could just be a lot of crossover. Maybe, you know, even if not outright copying, but, you know, we could, there's probably a lot that we could just take and tailor to what we're doing. So I think that a lot of the raw material is there. We just have to put it in the right form. So.
But I'm happy that you'll take it on, Bridget, because I kept looking at this and saying
I'll make an effort to do it before. Yeah, no, I've been on a roll lately, getting a lot of stuff done. So I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna roll with it, and I'm gonna, you know, I'll try to get something up by the beginning of next week. Does that sound okay?
Yeah.
And are you speaking about the mission or the vision or both, or
with just a draft of both? And like I said, it's going to be a very loose draft. I'm not saying this is what we are or anything. Just, you know. Here's a statement that we can start to work with when we have this conversation. And like I said, people can rip it apart as much as they want. I have to take no offense. It's literally just there to be something. It's like that opening sentence that people can look at and go, yeah, but it doesn't include this, or it does include that, or that's important, that's not important. Like, it's a starting point for thinking about it. That's all. But yeah, but
I'm happy. It makes sense to focus on, I don't know whether we focus on probably vision first and then mission afterwards, but people get confused between the two.
Yes,
so
they
do. So people will start to make things, well, this should be added to the mission statement, when in fact it should be added to the vision statement or even to the core value statement. So it gets very confusing where things should go, but you still need to focus in on each one in turn, because otherwise you're not going to get anything done. So.
Well, what I can do is I can create a draft of both. And then what I'll do is I'll also, if I had come up with some good examples of what other mission statements look like, I can actually include links to that so that people can look at it and kind of compare in their own mind to see whether they think I'm on the right track or not. But I'm just trying to create a starting point for the conversation. So, so it's, you know, I'm not pressuring myself to come up with a perfect statement, but at least, yeah. But again, it's just something that kind of fits that we can play with. and then the next time we meet, or if we have a, or if we schedule a separate meeting just to deal with this topic, then we can, start looking at each, you know, but little each at a time. If you try to look at too much at once, it's overwhelming. So, I've literally just come out of these, I think it was the last 2 months, I've come out of these conversations with like five administrators, you know, where, you know, yes, but we really want to use this word instead of this word, you know? Do you think this really covers it or does that cover it, you know? Yeah, so, you know, it's fresh. Now, it's like one of those things, it's not my favorite thing, but it's something that has to be done, so.
And we really appreciate that you're doing it, Bridget. So appreciated at this moment.
I mean, there are mechanical parts of the process, but it's also, it's really passionate. It's really the heart, it's the heart of what the organization is, and it's the template for every all the decisions. So there's something very exciting about the process, even though it has its downsides.
Well, again, it's just the same thing. It's just kind of like, you know, if you want the yard to look nice, you got to come mow the lawn. I mean, you've got to go out and do the things that, even if they're not, you know, it's like, okay. And actually, once you get into the work of it, it actually does become more interesting. It's just getting started. That's all. But when you talk about these things, and that's just it, you're right. You're totally right that vision and mission are frequently confused. I confuse them. I still confuse them. I've had a lot of schooling and writing them lately. So hopefully I can go back and use some of that and use that as kind of a starting point to help everybody in this process, you know, and see where we can take it. Because, you know, yeah, it is an important step, because once we create that, then all the other stuff will start to fall into place. So I've been thusly assigned. I will take care of it. I've thusly assigned myself. I'll take care of it. So I don't know if anybody else has any other thoughts.
I have something, but I want to leave the space open too for other potential questions, issues, or ideas. Okay, so one of the things that Fatima and Sarah pointed out, and it was just one among a number of items that I thought were interesting. The whole thing was interesting, but as far as like immediate, maybe the most immediate thing, and we dealt with this a little bit in the question of editorial, but on the level of co-op, like we're gonna have a statement, right? And then we're gonna have some editorial process. And some kind of final product will come out of that. But how will we decide how that final product looks? Like, which word gets chosen? How do you decide how to decide is the question. And they talked about a couple of different, you know, like models of that. Sociocracy, they mentioned holocracy. Different organizations have different ways of making decisions. Could just be like delegated to somebody, or it could be consent. It could be consensus. Consent and consensus are different things. One, you know, a group can consent to consent and just spontaneously do that, which I guess is what Sarah's co-op did. But it seems if we're going to do, this is going to be one of the first collective sort of decisions. It's like, what shall be our mission statement? What shall be our vision statement? What shall be our values? And I certainly, you know, as an initiator, like made certain decisions already, right? But now there's kind of the next level of it. Like that was my vision, but what's the collective vision? What's the collective mission? What's the collective decision? And, you know, again, like I'm sort of, I like improvising. I like collaborating in a sort of, you know, open-ended flowing way, but I don't mind having a system. Like, I don't mind having a system that is agreeable to you know, ourselves. So if we decided we wanted to consent to say, we're going to do this sociocratically, or we're going to do this holocratically, or, you know, we're going to, whatever principles we'd want to establish, then we'd know that if we'd know how to resolve conflict, you know, we'd have some to kind of refer to when disagreement arises, as it's, you know, as probable. And that's not to just, you know, that's not to discount just the importance of goodwill and all the kind of more soft values. But I think having, being able to say, this is how we work things out will be very valuable. It'll be very important to have, actually, especially it's like when you move from a small group to other people being involved and subgroups and committees and whatever else we have.
So I've worked,
go ahead, Mary, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, my experience with governance is not in cooperatives, but actually in the context of churches, of like Episcopalian churches, in fact, which is, I think, I bring it up because it's comparable in terms of numbers. I think we might be like talking about roughly, because it how you govern depends very much on the scale of your organization, right? Like how a cooperative of hundreds of people can be governed is different than a dozen. So what I'm used to is that there are general meetings, you know, where everyone can have their say, that you hold annually, at least, that would elect officers or the board or whatever, and that the board makes decisions by consensus, which, I mean, if we were the board, which we definitely aren't, but like, since we are the people showing up to make decisions today, and we are making our decisions by consensus. So that's the kind of thing I'm used to, maybe as like a starting point of something that can be now tweaked to our needs. But I think that's often very standard for organizations of our size. Is like a small governing body working by consensus, elected by a larger body with meetings to make sure that the larger body has a voice, not just through the smaller one. Does that make sense? Is that?
No, it definitely does. And I think, but we're kind of in a moment right now where it's like, who's the deciders, and then who gets to decide who's the deciders, and then at what point do we, because since we don't have a specific board in place, it's like, okay, so since we don't have the structure yet, we don't actually have the means of saying to the membership, hey, who do you want to elect to be in charge? So it's yeah, we're kind of in this weird liminal space with this. So I don't know. I mean, I just thinking of the structures that I work in, just, and again, this is much smaller scale, but usually it's certain people who are appointed to be whoever's considered to be the authority or whoever's considered to be making the decisions, let's just say. Let's just throw the word authority out. I don't want to use that. But if we're in a position where we say, okay, these are the people who are making the decisions, and we agree who those people are, then, you know, there could be a first agreed upon thing. And then that could be something potentially opened up to the general membership to say, you know, at the moment, at least for now, until there's like a formal structure put in place that's like that. And I think from all the documents I read, I mean, that does seem to be something we're definitely gonna have to do at some point. You know, having some kind of board to say, okay, these are the people who officially make decisions for the co-op, and, you know, however that's going to be, if they're elected, they're there for a certain term, they come, they go, whatever. But since we're sort of at a founding stage, as it were, I don't know if we want to say, okay, the people here are the ones making the decisions, or we'll make the initial decisions and then see what the group who's here thinks. I don't know. That's just my riff off of what you're saying there. So.
I could imagine us making decisions for now, purely by virtue of being here, but with a mandate to promptly present it to a general meeting that would then have the power for discussion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, exactly. That makes sense. Yeah, it's just a matter of, yeah, we're the ones who are here right now, but ultimately we may or may not be the ones who ultimately make those decisions. So,
because every organization that founds itself goes through this process. They are all in the same boat of not having a process and having to bootstrap themselves into a situation where they have a process. So I think general principles that such as you describe, Mary, are because it's a process of due diligence. If you do the work the way, you know, a kind of a reasonable template of the work, and you get to the end goal is not fixed. It can be changed by the membership afterwards. So you're not locked into a particular way of operating. The membership can decide afterwards to change that structure. So you just need an initial structure to work and a process for, you know, amending things and so forth.
It might be useful to specify what kind of decisions the board can make without consulting membership and which ones would require, like, would require a process of membership consultation.
But that's part of the process after we get through the membership, the mission statement, the vision. I mean, that's all in that documentation. We have to address who is a member, what kind of members are, how do they participate, what is a board, who sits on the board, what do they do? All that has to be worked out. All that is part of the process.
Yeah, and I think also one of the things that mentioned in that document was about time and detail, like, you know, the idea of what decisions do we need to make now? You know, and I think so right now we're doing this, we're laying a foundation, but then that might be high up on the list of things that we would need to do once all that's established to say, okay, we're gonna establish a board, we're gonna establish a set of rules for a board, you know, like that might be something that comes after. But yeah, I think we need to say who we are and what we're doing first. And then, since we're the people who have been here, you know, and there hasn't been any kind of formal structure established at this point, I don't personally, you know, can disagree, but I personally don't feel uncomfortable with saying the people who are here are qualified to make that decision, at least in the beginning, and then we can see what goes from there.
I think the only question I have is because the process to get us here, we did put out a call to the Infinite Conversation to say that anybody was welcome to come to the meeting. This is what the meeting's going to be talking about. So there is a kind of a general call. However, there is a question about who does the call reach? And perhaps there's an issue in terms of, do we need to broaden the reach of the call so that people feel feel more included in the process and therefore attend the process more. So that's the sort of the question that I have. I mean, you know, anyway, so I think I've made it myself.
Well, most people are not going to see a call posted in the e-zone. Like it's more for the purpose of that channel's editorial discussion.
Right.
And this co-opification building off of or growing, you know, as an offshoot of the editorial process, and the act of publishing books is kind of the prompt for doing this. Although I wanted to do this even before we were going to publish books, it just so happened this is the act, you know, this is the real concretion, first concrete production product where we could say we were doing this seriously, and, you know, we intend to really publish books and really sell books and really take in money and pay our authors. And so it's a totally different, you know, we're, I think, up-leveling, we're stepping to another level of responsibility and accountability. I think, yeah, who does it reach is a big question. And, like, I know that in discourses around equity, equality, and inclusion, like, it's not enough just to say we're open to everybody. Like,
agreed.
You also want to show a good faith effort. You want to actually attempt to publicize something, actually kind of reach out to communities that you claim that you're intending to engage. So I think it would be, I don't know the right timing exactly, but I think it would be a good idea, especially in particular if we're attempting to align with a larger movement, if that's a part of it, to let that people who are in that movement know, here is, and or people who are intersecting, like in the arts, in literature, etc., who let them know in reasonable ways and with reasonable amount of time notice that, you know, this organization is starting, this is our intentions, and, you know, we're undertaking this process of formation, we're doing so transparently, we welcome feedback and input. And I do think we'll need some at least starting body that when it comes down to it, makes the editorial calls on whether it's this word or that word. Like, there has to be somebody who ultimately makes that choice. And if some people don't like it, then at this stage, that's just the signal to them that this isn't the context for them. But it should be also responsive to the feedback that we get, and it should be kind of part of a creative feed loop with the membership and the proto membership. So, I mean, I think part of what I have imagined, I'll put this forth and see what you think, is that we would form, I like the term council more than board. Board seems kind of like a flat thing. Council, I could imagine, as a circular thing. And I did a talk about probably 3 years ago now with Anne Starsong. Y'all, I don't know who remembers her, but she's come and gone. She's done work with Indigenous wisdom traditions. And she offered me a model of a council. And it sort of brought together the directions, north, south, east, west. And it had this mythological symbolism, but it also meant to bring together opposite perspectives. And how do you form a sort of intelligent cognition? How do you bring in the relevant perspectives to the whole tribe or the whole or company or what have you? So I think that perhaps it would help that if we start with a kind of council, but then the mandate of the council is to start Cosmos, but then to open that up so that it would be a sort of provisional founding council. And then part of the mission of that council would be to establish the conditions for the voting by the membership classes of the first kind of councils, the first member, so it could be that those of us here who are participating and, you know, others who have been participating actively are part of that first council and who want to be, right? So I don't know if say John Davis wants to be, or Michael, or Caroline for that matter. She's not really active right now, but who actually would want to be in that role, knowing that it's a stewardship role in the process of going from not having anything to having something, from nothing to something. And to me, the only way to pick that is it's who showed up and who's stuck around and who's sort of proven themselves over time just to be trustworthy and be, somebody that we can all work with. That all happened organically. There was no, premeditated.
But I do think that one needs to plan in a consultation process beyond the council. I'm not quite sure the timing of it, but Bridget comes together with a draft thing. We do some initial discussion in the context of a council. And then at some point, the information is made available to a broader group. And that's where the need comes to reach out to people who may not be involved in the process right now. There's a kind of a process of engagement that needs to be enacted in order to get that.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of sort of like if you have a group and you say, okay, here's a subcommittee who's gonna work on this, or a task force. You can almost look at it this way at this point. And then that group does the fact finding, puts everything together. and then comes up with something that they present to the larger group. So I think that's what we're probably going to be doing here. The people, like Marco said, I think I agree that it should be the people who have been actively participating and have been around up to this point. Not if not for no other reason than the practical reason of people who have been around have an idea of what's going on. They're not coming into it like not knowing anything about what's going on. But after that, once some kind of just like where I'm coming up with the draft statements, it's like, okay, now we're going to move to the next stage and we have something that we think works. Now let's open it up to the membership and say, okay, what does everybody think? What's your feedback? But I think to try to bring too many people in initially, which is not what you're suggesting, I know, that could end up making it a very distracting process. You know,
only thing is I'm a bit sensitive to issues of inclusion because our community tends to be a little bit too homogeneous, even for our own comfort. And I feel that we need to make a little bit of a push to bringing a little bit more diversity into the discussion so that we don't get locked into homogeneous ways of doing things.
Right. Well, no, I agree with you. And actually, that's what I'm saying. We want to start with the people who are here who are going to say, okay, we're going to lay this groundwork. And then when you open it up, that's when you're opening it up. You're not saying, hey, here's the final statement, take it or leave it. You're saying, here it is. What's your thoughts on this? Like, what? Yeah. How can we further the discussion with the larger group, but start with the smaller group and then branch out once you have, just like we're starting with a basic statement and then saying, okay, let's rip this apart. Then once that statement's done, then we let a larger group kind of rip it apart and look at it and say, this is where we're going with it. And that may bring in some new ideas that we haven't even thought about. So,
yeah, I think a good way to do the process might be to produce a draft and then designate a period of consultation, like post it somewhere where all our members of the community can read it, give them a month to give written feedback, but then also have at least one meeting where they can all come and give verbal feedback and pose questions and so on. And then take all the notes and recording from that and make any changes we need. I guess do that as many times as feels necessary. But yeah, like some kind of formal consultation process,
right,
is what we need.
What if we looked at this in kind of a three-stage process? Like one is this starting seed stage where Bridget, you're gonna write a draft. We're gonna read it, give our feedback, tear it apart, do it. It'll go from you and us then to kind of the wider people who are already connected to Cosmos and are already active or at least actively lurking perhaps, but like they're already aware. So that could be in the forum. I think we should also send an email to whoever we have on our email list and say, look, the editorial group of Metapsychosis has been working on this process. These are first draft statements. We welcome your feedback. And then after that, there's a kind of larger outreach. Like this goes now to I think we can identify a few email lists or a few Facebook groups or, you know, other contexts where there are people who we reasonably could think would be interested in what we're doing. And in a way, it's like a test too, like of whether or not what we think is interesting, good, and beautiful, and true, and worthwhile resonates beyond, beyond the group that is already connected. And that then also becomes a signal to that larger group that there's something happening here, like pay attention. This may be something that is meaningful, to the movement or to whatever you happen to be doing. Related to Cosmos. So I don't know. Do you think that would be a good progression? And also the other thing is by that point, if we're going to move into having many different kinds of discussions and having to establish business model and organizational structure and things like that, we're going to need more talent. Like we're going to need people who want to do what we're doing and recognize the value, recognize the vision, etc. And are made aware of it and also get the right sign that it's serious. Like we've been working on this for a while and, we're trying to proceed with due diligence and with, you know, with a real, real positive intention.
Yeah, well, that is a good point, because you are going to actually need, I mean, there's the group of us and we can get things started, but when you start getting into the nitty gritty, there's some people like, I'm not the person you want working on the business model. You know, I mean, I'm just not, that's not where my mental talents are, you know, but it would be good to open it up to see, you know, who else could come in and might say, hey, you know, I want to work on this or I want to work on that, which we've talked about again for a while, but that might be the way to do it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, start with, okay, here's where we're starting. Here's a little small piece. Let's expand it to these people. Let's expand it to these people. And hey, by the way, we have more things to do. Who wants to be involved? You know, because if people are very interested and want to be involved, then we can recruit those people to do other parts of the process. So. If that makes sense, I don't know, but yeah.
Totally. I just want to check in with you, Doug. You tend to listen.
So you gave the outline. I think that's a good general outline of proceeding from, or maybe it was Mary, about go with what Bridget is this and then move into a little bit more formalization and publicizing our intent. So also that something that goes along with this, along the lines of my view, is also what the four of you have been working on. And as we mentioned, there's the core interest or the more pressing issues, such as what hasn't been mentioned this go around is the copyright and getting all that in order. And perhaps that's going to be another branch off of the mission value statements and all that that needs to be discussed parallel, same time, perhaps even before we have an official mission statement in place. I don't know. So that's in the back of my mind there, because I know just from reviewing the last recording, that seemed to be the direction some of you wanted to go. But over, yeah, I think onboarding some old flames, people that really contributed before, and seeing if they're available for feedback. I think there were quite a lot of business-minded individuals that could help us out if they saw that, oh, there will be an official legal document and we can get things started. Another thing along the lines of timeline is when I know in the recordings, Fatima and they gave us all the time in the world. They said, just keep it simple as well and get it done quick. So where, at least in regards to our relation with them, it sounds like we can just throw whatever we have at any time. So a couple questions I'm asking now is how much time do we want to give that? And also, what would the cost or in the revision process? So say we get everything done, we do keep it simple, so we don't spend another 5 years trying to articulate what's on our mind. How do we work with the timeline? How do we get something out? And once it is out, how do we revise that? And what are, how do we revisit exactly the same thing we're doing now? Hopefully with committees, subcommittees of people to assist members, so we can actually make things happen a little bit more cohesively, coherently, whatever it might be. Yeah, just a few thoughts. Perhaps a few too many.
Time. Yeah, time has always been a question. I think, realistically, it'll take a while to get all that feedback, right? I mean, Mary, you suggested a month to, by the time people get notice and check their inbox and come back to it, and it's, you know, it probably will, you know, what I think part of what maybe what I feel is useful is that there are milestones, and you know, you do want to, and maybe sometimes there are deadlines, But the important thing is like a sense of momentum, a sense like it's actually moving in the right direction and you can feel it. Like it's not stagnant. It's not just kind of stuck. I think deadlines can help move things forward. You know, that definitely is the case. For example, like we could have deadlines on feedback and then we could say that, you know, we intend to produce the next revision by X date, give it another 2 weeks or whatever it is. Like if we had some kind of structure where there's regular check-ins and regular kind of dates that we're aiming for to get things done, get the next stage started, how that will sync up with book publishing, I don't know exactly. And whether or not we need to drill down into all the details of, you know, copyright law and contracts in order, I don't know if it depends, if there's a dependency. I tend to think that we could keep things pretty simple and loose at first and we don't have to create elaborate, you know, copyright structures. Like I think there's a lot of opportunity for innovation there around how, you know, how we enable creativity and how we incentivize participation. That is something that could evolve over time. And getting a book out, having some even memorandum of understanding, you know, to start things off around how the money will be distributed and, you know, how people will be compensated for contributing to the project. I mean, that would be without, that doesn't have to result in a codified policy. It could be an experiment that then we draw on to codify a policy in a later, you know, as that a later group does. So I wouldn't want to get bogged down in that. I think to me, part of the reason for doing all this is so that on the basis of Cosmos, we could then be free to be creative, just be free to move forward. So I don't want this to stop the forward progress of our creativity and our, you know, projects. You know, if we were to say schedule like some regular times, much like with Metapsychosis, every couple of weeks we meet and things move forward. We could do the same with this, where there's a kind of a time where there where the group is meeting, the proto council perhaps, to work on the next piece, like to come together and focus on the vision, mission statement, or on the values, or on whatever, you know, the business model. Whatever it is that we need to look at, we can do that. But we have a structure for it. We have to have like a temporal. We know that it's not just kind of going to happen whenever it decides to happen. Like we are proceeding.
Well, yeah, I think if it's going to be something that's different, because right now, like you said, we meet for Metapsychosis on the second and fourth Wednesdays of the month. So that's our structure. Now I don't know. I imagine the setup of this, we need to have regular meetings, but it's not like that's going to be a forever thing necessarily for us. It's going to be a setup kind of a thing. So I don't know, depending on how fast you want to move, I don't know if it's a case of like, okay, like if I say I'm going to post something by the 14th of June that people can look at, and then just say, okay, do we want to see where we're at by the end of June? And then say, okay, we're going to have a meeting at the beginning of July. Do we want to meet before the end of June? You know, just like, yeah, we do, what do we want to establish? You know, I'm not saying all decisions have to be made by those dates, but, you know, just, you know, get something out and then say, okay, let's have a chance for feedback online and then say, okay, now we're going to have a meeting. But again, that's going to be a matter of people's availability and who's involved and so forth. And then maybe just start that way and then see how those meetings evolve. If you need to meet once a month, if you need to meet, you know, just about this kind of stuff, or if you want to have a group that meets a little more often. I'm not sure. That's just what I'm thinking about, but.
Because we could meet, you know, for second and fourth? We're meeting for the, so we could meet first and third, or at least leave those dates open for meetings if we don't meet every time.
Every Wednesday is more of a time commitment than I can make at this moment.
If
I'm going to have a lot more cooperative meetings, I need to have a fewer editorial meetings. There has to be a
that's kind of where I'm at too. I'm like, yeah, it's like, that's why I was kind of saying maybe once a month, but I'm also recognizing the fact that there might, maybe we should try to say once a month, and if there's something coming up that we need to decide on, we could say, okay, we're going to throw another meeting in somewhere here, you know, if we need to. But yeah, I don't know that I'd want to regularly have 4 weeks of meetings. I think I, right now it's hard for me. I'm trying to do at least one, but it's I agree. I that would be a big commitment. So
maybe one of the editorial meetings could be replaced by the cooperative meeting.
Yeah, but we could have one meeting about the print, the publications, and we could have one meeting about this. Mm-hmm. And then that way, we're all
on. In a way, that would. I don't. I didn't mean to add meetings. This is a bad habit, probably.
Yeah, I mean, what we're doing is inherently bureaucratic and meeting oriented, so it can't be helped. It's like necessary work.
But. And yeah, and there's no reason, because we kind of do a quick catch up, like we said at the beginning, about, okay, what are we doing with metapsychosis? What are we doing? So if we have, and actually, I don't know, depending on what's going on with the book publication, if there's not a whole lot going on with that, you know, at the moment, I mean, at least until, well, I don't know, imagine there will be soon. But, you know, we could just say, you know, okay, there's not a lot for this. Let's make this meeting, and then maybe the next meeting. We can always fluctuate too, depending
yeah,
on.
Yeah, we can always manage it. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, yeah, we'll basically just say there's two meetings a month. One will be about the print/journal, and one will be about establishing the co-op, if that makes sense.
So, I mean, would that mean that the next meeting at this time would be the second, this is the second Wednesday, right? So
it'd be the 23rd.
So it'd be the fourth Wednesday. And that would be about publications.
Yeah.
And then next meeting, in other words, the second Wednesday of July would be a co-op meeting.
Right. And in the meantime, like I said, if I put up something on the 14th, that gives people a month to give feedback on the mission and vision statements. And who knows, maybe online we will have worked something out by then that we can talk about. But that gives us some time to think about those topics without any pressure to say, okay, we got to come up with, you know, a vision statement in 2 weeks. You know what I mean? It, you know, with everything else everybody has on their plate, that might be a realistic time frame.
Well, it creates a kind of like a rhythm where if, let's say we have a meeting now, in 2 weeks there's something, a deliverable, right? And then there's 2 weeks more or less to absorb that and to come back to the next meeting, you know, having responded to that thing. So like it actually gives time for, you know, for dissemination, absorption, and then response to the new information that we're producing, right? Like if it's too fast, people don't have a chance to actually absorb it, and it gets too kind of densely packed with other things. The one thing I'm a little with this time period, it's going to be more North America centric. Like it's going to be hard to have people in Europe participate because it's like middle of the night there or late at night. Part of why we tend to do the cafes earlier in the day, because it works, although it's daytime for folks in the state and some of them are working, a lot of people work, you know, a lot of people can be flexible, but it allows people overseas to participate as well. So, I mean, maybe we should keep this now because we have this time that works for us until we get to that next level where we want to be inclusive of as many time zones as we can. And then at that point, we look for another time and keep it.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, when you get, like I said, when you get to the point where right now we're just in the planning stages, like the early planning stages. So once we get to a point where we say, hey, we have something that we want to share with the general membership, then you want to think about, it's not going to be our regular editorial time because it's not just going to be us. So.
And maybe then we schedule a meeting where, you know, it's at an accessible time and people can, they can respond, like we post something, they can reply, we post something and a meeting time. So there's notice. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of feedback window. You can reply by text and or you can show up to the meeting that's scheduled at this date. And, you know, we'll talk. We'll have a kind of open period for feedback. and then there'll be something that happens after that, but it's more structured, you know, and there's, you know, time given for people who can show up, who can't show up, you know, who are able to respond immediately or who need a little more time, but we're trying to be accommodating, I guess.
Sounds like a plan. Sounds good to me.
And we're coming up on the hour, so.
Yes. Yeah. You were going to say something, Mary?
No, I was going to express approval.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're here.
As was I. I think it's a good idea.
I think we made more progress than I kind of expected, so I'm kind of pleased with the meeting.
That's good.
Excellent.
It's all good.
Good sign. We just got to keep doing that.
That's it. Well, you know, yeah, I know. We're always like very organized. Like, okay, what are our deliverables for this meeting? So, yeah. So we've got, so I have an assignment. I will most definitely, because it's on my list. So as long as it's on my list, it gets done. So so I will have something up by Monday, and then I want to give it some thought. But then, yeah, and then we can start the process from there and start with our group.
Okay, and just before we go, I mean, one little big thing, we talked about decision-making and how that can work differently at different scales. I mean, are we consenting to consent or to consensus? I mean, to me, that makes sense in a small group, that basically we all agree. Mm-hmm. And I think even for a council, to really have a coherent, not a self-divided, like there should be a small enough group that is widely enough, like, representative and inclusive of various, you know, diverse perspectives in the co-op as a whole, but that smaller group can agree, or can at least agree to disagree if there's consent. And, you know, maybe that group then can take up exactly what that means in practice, but like at least what we're assuming and presupposing, you know, moving forward is that we're going to agree, and when we agree, then we can open it up to feedback from a larger group.
Yes.
And if we don't agree, we can express that and discuss it and work through it. But that's essentially a value or a principle that we're implicitly adopting or explicitly adopting.
At the moment, yeah, because we're at the starting phase. So yeah, this is where we're starting.
May it be so.
So would it be.
Oh.
Pretty Wiccan, sorry.
All right. we can incorporate diverse blessings and languages of accord. Cool. Excellent. Wonderful. Thank you. I feel satisfied, complete, top of the hour.
Okay.
So we've also honored our time commitment, and that feels good. And so I guess our next meeting will be then for editorial, and that'll be in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sounds good. I'll have something out by Monday. So just take a look at the thread that Jeffrey Jen started, and then we'll go from there. So
feel free, you know, it's a long thread, and it's kind of what's the word? Circumambulating, or it's it might be worthwhile just to start a dedicated thread and say, this is a thread for feedback on this text.
Vision and mission.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Then
yeah,
I'll do.
Okay.
That.
Okay. Yeah.
Just because I think this other thread could continue, and it's
in the
more
E-zone
about the general
letter?
Like. What's that?
E zone. Just to be general, to be clear, or do you want me to start it somewhere else?
I think we could start it there. It's an editorial process, and I mean, the only people, everybody who we would, I think,
it's heroes has access. To
yeah.
It.
Yeah. I mean, everybody who's not only editors have access to that e-zone, also like people that are regulars at the cafe or regulars in, like, and give feedback or as readers, like,
okay.
They also can see it. Like Lisa will see it, and Michael Stumpf and John Davis will see it. So yeah, if we need to move it, we can move it too.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Okay.
Buddy.
All right.
Have a good night.
Sweet. Bye, everybody.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Good night.